Mystery and Wonder presents a double album launch. Montreal's Sound of the Mountain with pioneers of the Japanese improvised music scene, Tetsuji Akiyama and Toshimaru Nakamura. Et le duo Montréalais, Ripple Ganger. Sunday, October 27 at Bar La Ritz PDB, 7 p.m. Tickets and more information at mwrecs.com. Une co-diffusion avec Super Music and CKUT 90.3 FM.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing.
On.
There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. This is CKUT on 90.3 FM, broadcasting live from Montreal. My name is Amy Lloyd.
And I'm Maya Abitson.
Today we broadcast live from the Geojiage, the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe Nations. The time now is 5:02.
Today we have an interview with second-year McGill student Samantha Nashman. Sam, who identifies as a trans woman, spoke with us about her research regarding media representations of trans women as a GSFS major. We spoke with Sam about fetishized representations within pornography, problematic cinematic narratives, euphoria, Trisha Paytas, and ways in which media outlets and mediums can better represent trans women. We want to inform viewers of a content warning, as we will be discussing transphobia, fetishization of trans women in the porn industry, and violence against trans women. Before our headlines, we wanted to play a few quick tunes. So first up is Skinny Kids with Stranger on the Highway, followed by Frankie with Dream Reader. Enjoy.
Easy.
That was Stranger on the Highway by Skinny Kids, followed by Dream Reader by Frankie. The time now is 5:10. Now for our weekly headline roundup.
The housing minister of Nunavut has brought to federal attention the billion-dollar housing problem, wreaking havoc upon the Indigenous people of the territory. The Nunavut Housing Corporate, which is managed by Nunavut and funded by the federal government, provides homes for people in the area, not a lot of which are kept in habitable conditions. Residents have detailed no air conditioning or fans, as well as strange smells, improper housing foundations, and rashes caused by the conditions in these homes. A federal report has said that the Nunavut experiences crowding in homes 9 times more than any other province. The repair rate in Nunavut homes is at 30.2%. A territory's minister has spoken out, saying the housing corporate has received over $200 million from the federal government. However, this is nowhere near the budget needed to adequately fix the housing crisis. On top of this, the homelessness crisis in Nunavut is growing in tandem, with people often sleeping in fishing huts. The housing minister proposed that the province needs around 3,300 more housing units, which would cost around $1 billion. The peoples of the community have called upon Indigenous Affairs Minister Carolyn Bennett to help with this crisis, with little response received in so far.
This past Saturday, both pro- and anti-immigration rallies were held at a shipping lot of Lacolle, a small Quebecois border town. Lacolle sees its fair share of illegal immigrants, who are often arrested on the spot for border crossing at the town's unguarded border, Roxham Road. While most of these migrants associate with the Muslim faith, thousands are Haitian, West African, and Central American as well. For more than 2 years, this is a site of protest for far-right groups who wear militia-inspired outfits and gather in protest of Quebec's, quote, invasion, unquote, by migrants, says an organizer of the anti-immigration rally. The far-right groups present on Sunday included the Soldiers of Odin and the Canadian Nationalist Party, both of which have been tied to white nationalist movements. However, pro-immigration activists were demonstrating for their cause in Lacolle as well. An organizer for this group said that they were present to show that the far right, quote, don't have a monopoly on public opinion, unquote. The protest was patrolled by cars and officers in tactical gear and remained peaceful throughout its duration.
This past Thursday, the Alliance for Promotion of Public English Language Education in Quebec met to discuss the province's Bill 40. The proposed bill suggests abolishing school boards and replacing them with service centers staffed by volunteer parents and community members. While the French school boards won't allow an election for board representatives, the bill allows English school boards this democratic right. The first election to pass the law is on November 1, 2020. This leaves little consultation for public input. The Alliance met to work on and improve the proposed law, which has received much criticism from Quebec educational employers. In hopes to keep school boards intact, the Alliance is scheduled to meet with Quebec's education minister in the near future.
Quebec Solitaire MNAs and housing organizations reported an unprecedented number of evictions in Montreal properties at a press conference this past Sunday. According to these groups, landlords are exploiting loopholes in housing laws to get rid of occupants and jack up rent prices, making living situations unaffordable for most. MNA Ruba Ghazal called the situation a, quote, housing crisis, unquote, and called upon the Quebec government to place a moratorium on evictions for the purpose of altering repurposing units where vacancy rates are under 3%. They also hope to set up an emergency committee to help displaced tenants find homes. Often, eviction notices are sent in December, so housing groups are preparing for a large number of complaints, which have already doubled in the past year. It should be noted that as of right now, landlords do not have to prove that construction or renovations are underway, nor that they truly need to be carried out in order to evict tenants. Many cases have been pressed against landlords as of late, many leading in financial settlements from the government.
That was our weekly headline roundup. Don't go anywhere. We have a great interview coming up. In the meantime, enjoy this song by Pop called Kids.
Right.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. The time now is 5:18. That was Kids by Pup, who are playing in Montreal tonight at the Corona Theater. If you like their stuff, tickets are still available for their show. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Now for our interview with Sam Nashman. As a gender, sex, feminist, and social justice studies major, otherwise known as GSFS, Sam covers issues of unjust portrayals of trans women in the media. Today we spoke with Sam about trans taboos within pornography, problematic cinematic narratives, and ways in which media outlets and mediums can better represent trans women. Again, we want to issue a content warning as we will be discussing transphobia, fetishization of trans women in the porn industry, and violence against trans women in joy.
Hey. These were like the first full scripts I ever read. They were really exciting and like fun to read. The fact that labels are sort of left out of the story is one of my favorite elements.
It's really the first show to portray like late millennial, early Gen Z teenagers accurately.
When I got the breakdown, I was like, oh great, just another, you know, normal sort of thing where I have to tokenize and, you know, label myself and put myself in a box. And then I read the sides and I was like, oh, yeah. This is different. I just get to be a high school boy and that is amazing.
Yeah.
It was elements. Awesome. I think it lets the characters breathe. And Jules was really interesting to me as well. Obviously, some of our life experience lines up. Diving into it emotionally sounded really exciting.
Stories are a big part of our lives. We look to cinema and television to not only entertain ourselves, but find narratives that we ourselves can connect to. Which is why representation, honest, authentic, and accurate representation is so important. As we mentioned earlier, we spoke to Sam Nashman about this. Here's what she had to say. Firstly, I wanted to ask you, how is your Queer History Month going?
It's going pretty good. I'm taking a lot of classes that pertain to a lot of queer history and queer issues, so it's really cool to have this month to, you know, celebrate that and acknowledge that.
So I know that recently you've been conducting a lot of research on trans women's representation within the media. In light of Queer History Month, I wanted to ask, how has trans women's representation in the media evolved?
Dating back to, like, you know, probably like the 80s and the 70s and all that, there weren't a lot of trans characters. Trans characters started like emerging in the 90s and early 2000s. But, you know, in that era where they started to emerge, they were really seen as a punchline or a joke. A lot of them were like referred to as the tranny, which is a horrible word to use, but they used it. Kind of this, the idea of this man dressing up as a woman to trick other men to have sex with them. And it's just, you know, like, it's very, you know, very hurtful and very derogatory towards, you know, people of trans experience. And so it's definitely evolved, especially this year with movies like Assassination Nation and Euphoria, who have like very strong trans women leads. And the representation is very accurate, you know, like they actually tell a true story of what it means to be a trans woman or, you know, just trans in general. And so, yeah, so we've definitely had a step forward in the right direction rather than a step back.
You mentioned trans women are often the target of humor despite the supposed lighthearted nature of these jokes. How does portraying transgender women as a punchline impact how they are treated outside of movie scripts?
I mean, like, what you see in movies is like a huge influence, and so it definitely impacts and definitely, you know, impacts how people view people of trans experience. You know, it's not just trans women, but anyone who's trans, you know, they're seen as sexual predators or, you know, someone that wants to trick you, you know? So, it's definitely horrible if people are seeing that these characters as they were portrayed, you know, in the past, then it will probably influence what people think of them in real life, obviously.
So this question is a two-parter. So you talked about Assassination Nation and Euphoria as strong examples that prove this evolution of representation for trans women. So I wanted to ask you,
why are those pieces in specific, why are they strong examples, and how do they prove that this representation that representation for trans women is becoming more progressive?
So in the case of Euphoria, the writers have chosen to, you know, display a trans character and all that she is and everything that goes into being trans. However, her main story arc isn't that she's trans or coming to terms with her gender identity, or, you know, or like it's not this huge coming out, and it's not about that. It's more about her life, navigating high school, navigating just life problems, relationships, everything that goes into life as a trans woman, and not like becoming a trans woman. So I think that that is such an accurate representation of what a trans woman is, because yeah, a huge part of being trans is about coming out and is about being, you know, becoming who you are. However, like there's so much more, you know, that's only like a year where, you know, you're transitioning, or, you know, I mean, everyone's kind of always, you're always evolving, you're always transitioning, but you know, like the main part of your transition only lasts like, you know, a few months. And so there's so much more to life being trans than just the coming out, than just that story. So the fact that they've chosen to tell the story of basically what happens after without, you know, putting too much emphasis on this is a trans character, like, look at her, this is her, you know, and they don't choose to fetishize her. They don't choose to, you know, put like a huge emphasis on her trans identity. They just choose to, you know, make her a woman first. And I think that's kind of what all trans women want, especially for themselves. And they want, that's what they want to see in media.
So then in what ways can media and cinematic productions still do better for transgender women?
I think that, you know, well, I mean, as I mentioned, Euphoria and Assassination are very special cases because the characters that are trans are actually played by transgender actresses. However, there are so many cases where movies or TV shows will choose to have a transgender character, and there's nothing wrong with that, and they don't portray them in any negative way, and they don't shine a horrible light on them. However, they choose to use cisgender and usually male characters, and sometimes female characters. Like, they're, if you look at Dallas Buyers Club, Jared Leto plays a transgender woman, and he did amazing, and he really told the story very well. However, there are so many trans actors and actresses that could have played that role and could have spoken such a different truth and could have told such a different side to it because they've experienced similar things as the character. So I think that when it comes to casting trans roles, I think that you should be definitely looking at trans actors and actresses.
Furthering this conversation, so the dilemma of trans characters being played by cis actors, why is this unethical?
I feel that it could be unethical because you're kind of, in a way, producers and writers who are casting cis actors and actresses to play transgender characters, they might be alluding to the fact that a trans woman or a trans man isn't good enough to be, you know, represented in media, isn't in it. And, you know, it's not that it's unethical. It's just a little unfair, and it doesn't really make any sense. If a writer had a transgender character in mind and their first thought is, oh, I'll cast Scarlett Johansson, or I'll cast Jared Leto, or I'll, you know, Elle Fanning, that doesn't make any sense. You know, like, you wouldn't, if there was a movie being made about Rosa Parks, you wouldn't be like, oh, like, maybe Margot Robbie would be good for that role. You know, like, you would think, you would want, if there's a trans character in a TV show or a movie, you know, you would think maybe have a trans actor or actress because they know how to tell that story and they know the truth of that and they know what to say and how to make the character the best it can be. And it really helps the trans community to show such huge representation in media.
And do you think there's something to be said about the fact that more often than not, cis actors will play transgender characters, but transgender characters will always get casted as cis actors, so cis characters?
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. Yeah, that's 100% true. There are more cases of trans characters playing trans actors than them playing cis characters. Usually it's a bit really unheard of a trans woman or a trans man getting cast as a cis character. I think that it's actually very interesting. In a very old James Bond movie, I'm pretty sure from the 80s, there was, you know, there's always a Bond girl, and there was a woman, her name was Tula, I believe, and she was cast as a Bond girl, and she actually posed for Playboy, and she was very, very, very gorgeous and amazing and very powerful, and they found out that she was transgender, and the media, like, crucified her because she was seen as, like, a sex symbol, and men felt like they were being tricked. Again, like, going back to that idea of like, the idea of, like, men being tricked into sex with a trans woman, which is absolutely absurd. But, you know, and so that's actually a very special case, and it's very interesting that it was such a long time ago that it happened. I'm not sure if it's the 80s. I don't really know the exact date, but yeah, so a more recent example of, you know, some, like, of a trans actor or actress being cast in a cisgender role is the new Netflix show The Politician, where this actor played, I'm pretty sure, a cisgender male in this TV show. He was either cisgender, or they just didn't specify whether he was trans or cis. So yeah, I think it's very interesting, and it's definitely a really interesting point to bring up about, you know, like, yeah, it would be really amazing for trans characters to be playing trans roles, but also for trans characters to be playing cis roles, just as cis people play trans roles.
So continuing the conversation, moving it into a different direction, we've been focusing mainly on movies and television shows. However, social media representation is equally important this day and age. Therefore, I want to talk about the infamous YouTube sensation Trisha Paytas. Recently, they came out as trans. However, many found their understanding of what it means to be trans as problematic. And your opinion was problematic about Paytas's definition of being transgender.
I think that there are a few problems, especially with this case. I think her wording was definitely not very correct and not very PC. I think that it was... She basically was talking about how someone could fully transition or partially transition, and there's really no such thing as doing that, you know, like, there's no such thing as a partial transition. If you identify as trans and that is who you are, it doesn't matter what surgeries you have, it doesn't matter how you present, what clothes you wear, what your face looks like, what your body looks like. If you come out as transgender and you say, this is me, these are my pronouns, then that's just how you need to view that.
Apologies, we have a quick technological issue, but we're fixing it, so enjoy this song as we do that. was Fasting by Dopey's Robe. Again, we apologize for the issue, but we're back on track. We're going to start the interview from 11 minutes.
To be trans as problematic. And your opinion was problematic about Paytas's definition of being transgender.
I think that there are a few problems, especially with this case. I think her wording was definitely not very correct and not very PC. I think that she basically was talking about how someone could fully transition or partially transition, and there's really no such thing as doing that. You know, like, there's no such thing as a partial transition. If you identify as trans and that is who you are, it doesn't matter what surgeries you have, it doesn't matter how you present, what clothes you wear, what your face looks like, what your body looks like. If you come out as transgender and you say this is me, these are my pronouns, then that's how you need to view them, and it's just out of respect. So I think that the wording she used was definitely a bit problematic. However, I don't think it was coming from a place of hate. I think it was coming 100% from a place of ignorance. I also think that at the end of the day, I think that Trisha Paytas does a lot of things for views and does a lot of things, you know, for likes and comments. And so I think there's kind of like the boy that cried wolf effect on this situation, where it's like, it's a bit hard to believe, especially because of how they choose to present and how they choose to, you know, identify and express themselves to the world. But again, like, it's a bit of a contradiction from what I said before, because it shouldn't matter what a person looked like. If that's their identity, then that's their identity. A point that I wanted to touch on, where they said that they believe that they are a gay man who practices drag, which I completely understand. I think that if they were born, you know, in the male sex with male genitals, I don't believe that they would transition to be female. I think that they would probably practice drag and be a drag queen. However, something about a drag queen is that their drag persona is just a stage persona, and that's not how they identify. It's like a character that they play. And so I think that what Trisha Paytas was trying to say is that all, like, the glitz and the glamour and the pink and the nails and the hair that they express to the world is a persona and is a drag and is, you know, is not how they really see themselves. And so I think that with the case of Trisha Paytas, I think that it's important to respect however pronouns they choose to use. It's important to respect what pronouns they choose to use, you know, how they choose to express themselves. And if they say that they're trans male, then, you know, I think that it's our job to respect them I think that if they say that they are trans and they say that they want to be, if they say that they are trans and if they say that they, you know, want to present male and they want to use masculine pronouns, and I think that it's just our job to respect that and to understand that. And if it does come out that this was, you know, a publicity stunt or something to get views or likes, then I think that that's pretty awful. But, you know, until then, we just need to respect their decision.
So then what is problematic about the way in which they approached Trisha Paytas announcing their transition?
I think that the media kind of thought of it as a joke, but not, I don't think that the media thought that the idea of coming out as trans was a joke. I think that they thought that the idea that Trisha Paytas was coming out as trans was a joke, you know? And there's so many different specific cases that you can look at and that you can, you know, pick apart. And with the case of Trisha Paytas, it's kind of like separating sand on a beach, you know, like counting every grain of sand on a beach. You can't really dissect it, because just dissecting anyone's identity and dissecting anyone's expression is kind of, you know, it's full of contradictions and it's full of different things. And I can say that it's okay if you say that you're trans, if you say that you're trans female, but you choose not to use pronouns, you choose to have short hair, you choose to have a beard, you choose to wear male clothes, however you want to go by she, her pronouns, that's your decision to make. And you need to show them respect, and it's no different for Trisha Paytas. And so do I truly believe that they are trans? I don't know. That's not my call to make, and that's not anyone's call to make. So I think that just going to the approach of just respecting them and respecting their wishes is the best thing you can do without stepping on anyone's toes.
So, focusing back to you, what are some social media stars that you look to when it comes to representation?
I think that the YouTuber Gigi Gorgeous is pretty amazing. She has a documentary that documented her entire transition. She is very candid and very open about how she's chosen not to have any type of bottom surgery. She talks very candidly about trying to conceive a child with her then fiance, now wife, Nats Getty, and how her experience at sperm banks and everything. I think that she just gets very open and very candid. And although, you know, she is very wealthy and has, like, you know, a lot of plastic surgery and seems a little bit unattainable for many people, I think that she is very raw and very candid with her videos. And yeah, so I think that she is such a great person. You know, if you want to kind of get to know someone who's trans on social media, she's definitely someone to look for.
What are some taboos that still exist within the media for trans women?
Some taboos definitely are, I think that, you know, as I mentioned before, Trisha Paytas had mentioned this, and a lot of people still have this mentality of if a person has fully transitioned or partially transitioned. And like I said before, there's no such thing as a full transition or a partial transition. It doesn't matter, you know, what you have between your legs or what you have on your rib cage or what you have, you know, or how long your hair is or what makeup you wear, if you wear makeup at all. It doesn't matter, you know. The only thing that matters is what you say and how you identify. And so I think that a lot of people still use the word partial transition or half transition or half female, or, you know, just they're, it's just wrong. And I think that, you know, and of course there's also in the media so many, like, especially on the news, just so many horrible things said about trans people. I think trans people are still referred as drag queens or cross-dressers, which, you know, is just not true. You know, trans folks are trans folk. And so it's just, you know, sometimes in the media, people use the wrong terminology. And I think that that is something that needs to change. But yeah, other than that, I think that we've come so far as a community. The trans community has just taken so many steps forward. And I think that we're only going up.
Furthering the discussion on taboo topics, how can representation for trans women in pornography be problematic?
I think that in pornography, trans women are fetishized. You know, they're kind of referred to as a she-male or a chick with a dick. And I think that that is just very problematic. And I think that's what definitely feeds into, like, the fetish of, like, wanting to date a trans woman, you know, and not because you like her personality or because you want to get to know her or because you think she's very strong. I think that it has to do with, like, you wanting to date her because, like, you think it's hot and you think that it's, like, a kink and a fetish. And, you know, trans, like, we're not here to be your fetish and we're not here to fulfill your fantasy. We're here to be ourselves. And I'm a woman, and, you know, it doesn't make you gay, and it doesn't make you, like, have, like, a trans fetish to, like, want to date me. And so I think that it definitely plays into that idea of, like, a trans woman is just, like, a kink or a fetish and not, like, an actual human being.
And how would this hurt trans women outside of porn?
I think that it would honestly make it harder for trans women to build honest relationships with men who have, you know, who have viewed this porn and who has, you know, seen. I think that it's hard for trans women to form relationships with men, especially if they've seen this pornography or these videos, because, you know, they might, like I said, they might be seen, or they might feel like they're a fetish, or just, you know, something to cross off, like, a sexual bucket list, and not someone that's worth getting to know or worth, you know, loving. You know, it makes us feel unworthy of love, which is just absolutely horrible.
In your opinion, what is one strategy to combat misrepresentation?
I think that telling more stories, that real stories of trans women, I think that, you know, maybe even documentaries about actual stories and not about transitioning, because, you know, people kind of get the gist of what transitioning means. I think that showing what comes after and showing the struggles, you know, just moving through life as a trans woman, the many struggles of being a post-op trans woman or a pre-op trans woman, you know, like, getting in depth of what it's like to, you know, go through SRS and, you know, and so I think that, and just telling more real and raw stories and having them told by trans actors and actresses and, you know, and even having some trans actors and actresses playing cis roles, you know? So yeah, I think that definitely having more trans people in the media and having them tell their own stories would definitely help combat that.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today, Sam.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. Thanks for joining us this week, Sam. We hope you found that interview insightful. Now we're going to take a quick music break. So first up, we have Mac DeMarco with On the Level, followed by Grimes with Flesh Without Blood. Enjoy.
Thank you.
That was On the Level by Mac DeMarco, followed by Flesh Without Blood by Grimes. You're listening to Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Thanks again for tuning in this week. Much appreciated. Come back next week at the same time for another show. Once again, we want to thank Sam Nashman for speaking with us. We'll see you all next week. Playing us out, we have Dream Portal by Ronin. Thank you.
straight, stand tall.
You're listening to an archived version of Urban Indigenous Radio broadcast originally on October 8th. Enjoy.